Life can feel overwhelming, but on my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Braithen, we're in it together. Every Friday brings you a new story. Listen to From the Heart with Rachel Braithen wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Femme Force podcast. My name is Rachel Paskman, and I am your host. And today I am really excited because we are talking to a multi-million dollar coach for coaches and consultants with over 13 years in business. So welcome, Jean. I'm so excited to have you here. We're going to be talking about resilience, marketing, ethical sales, and personal reinvention, which I think is just such a big deal right now for women and always as we're going through different phases of our lives.
I agree. Great to be here, Rachel. I just thought I'd tell you now it's actually pronounced Jean.
Love that for us. Okay. Jean. Perfect. I love the French part of it. So Jean, how would you describe what you do today?
Well, what I do today, it's changed a little bit because I've moved my market up. We work with high achieving coaches, consultants, and fractionals. That's the bread and butter of my business. And we help them to build their businesses. Sometimes they're scaling and sometimes it's building, because that's two different things, actually. People think scaling is immediate, but it's after. It's I have a bit of a bee in my bonnet about that because people use the word scale all over. So we help them build, then we help some scale, depending where they are, with high ticket clients, but that's a high profit, very sustainable, manageable business where you still have a life. So that's what we do. We also have another offer that we were just talking about a second ago, which is ultra high net worth individuals, CEOs and founders. That's not for coaching. So that's what we do. And we are passionate about helping people to thrive, because that's what really rocks my boat. And we help various people do that, thriving in different ways. But I literally get such an adrenaline and dope hit from helping people to thrive. It's like my addiction is that.
I mean, it's not a bad addiction to have. And I feel like the coaching industry, it's getting really popular. We're getting, we're inundated with a lot of people turning into coaches. So what makes your approach different from the coaches, the other coaches that are out there?
We are not spammy. That's what makes us different. We're not spammy or weird. And we don't teach people to be spammy or weird. And I think most people get what I'm saying here, because I'm just short of it all. We teach our clients, and I do, how to communicate in a normal way without being businessy or markety or anything-y, just down to who are you and how can we help you? Not who are you and I'm going to put on this show and position myself as a this or a that, or all of that is fake. I won't say the word inauthentic. It's just fake. So what we teach people to be is hashtag unfake. That's like a hashtag I created called hashtag unfake. Maybe it's also, I thought I created it. So it's really about getting to the very basics of communication. And it's not about the positioning of acting like you're famous. There's a lot of layers in between communicating with somebody if there's all these layers of fakeness. So what we do is we get rid of all those layers and say, okay, there's a human being. I'm a human being. What do you need? How can I help you? Here it is. Would you like to invest or not? It's that simple. And we take off and we take out all the manipulation. I'm not into those sales techniques because it's literally teaching people how to manipulate people. If you have a good product or service, there is no need to do those kinds of sales.
No. And I mean, they're investing in themselves at the end of the day with this kind of work, which is so important to be able to do to advance their career and advance in themselves.
Correct. I mean, you are also investing, you are taking a chance on a service. Mm-hmm. Luckily at this point, we have so many hundreds of testimonials that the issue is never, are we legit? Because when you first start a business, there is a lack of trust because you're not known. So the good thing is I'm in a situation now where nobody says, how do I know this is legit? How do I know I can trust you? So that's good, because that is a whole issue taken off the table. Now it's just like, is this a fit? And of course, there's always the money fear. People are terrified of spending money. And you can't be a business person if you're terrified of investing in your business and yourself. You will not be a hugely successful business.
Especially when the business is yourself.
Exactly.
You're doing that kind of investment.
More or less, most coaches, it is themselves. They might have a small team, but it's pretty much themselves, right?
And I mean, you started out, you know, we're going to go in a little bit into your background here, but solo parent, deep in debt, and then you started this coaching business. So give me a little bit about your background and, you know, how you ended up going into this, because it was a really inspiring story.
Right. Actually, I was a coach. I started coaching. I was solo and my kids were 1 and 4. And, you know, I was in New York City, newly with a 1 and a 4-year-old. That's not easy. If anybody knows New York City, I think you get my drift. And that was when I started 14 years ago, almost 13 and change. And I started the business doing it like everybody else, which I wish that I'd figured out what I know now way earlier, because it was 8 years of doing the normal everyday stuff of networking, speaking, events, more networking, being out there. It's very exhausting. And then about 6.5 years ago or so, maybe more towards 7 now, I found myself again in deep debt after more stuff happened. And I was in another city that was not New York City in the Midwest. And that kind of marketing wasn't even working. And I thought, what do I do? So then I was, again, in very deep debt, actually.
Yeah.
No assets. And I was 54 then. And I thought, I've got to figure this out. So that's when I figured out this organic marketing piece, where getting clients online, that's what we teach, is to get clients online and not have to network. You could if you want, but that's just because you just feel like networking. People place all of their eggs in the basket of counting on networking, and that is exhausting and it's not sustainable, which is what I learned. So we help people get clients sitting at home because it's all on the internet, mostly on LinkedIn now.
Well, LinkedIn is such a great platform. I feel like it was undervalued for so long and looked at as just like, this is a corporate thing. This is a corporate thing. You only post basically your resumes. And it's turned into so much more of a, in a way, an adult social media aspect where you're really like confident in yourself. You can post about your jobbing. You can do a lot of that, which is really different than what you're getting on Instagram, TikTok, X, all of
Facebook.
That jazz.
Yes. Yeah. Also, they made it really hard to get clients. I mastered Facebook first, Facebook, LinkedIn, then Instagram. I don't even market on Instagram and Facebook anymore because it is just so hard to get through the noise now. And it's really hard to get clients. So I focus on LinkedIn. Actually, I did better last year than any year just doing one of them. I also have a podcast, which does get clients as well. So I agree. And the good thing about LinkedIn is people would not put up with bad behavior on there. They would all be flagging everybody. They'd be you would have a lot of people complaining if people started treating LinkedIn exactly like Facebook or Instagram or TikTok.
It's a lot like you have external HR on there. You're like, you can't post that on LinkedIn. Like, this isn't like your personal Instagram that's private. Like, you need to be very careful about what you post and who you're tagging or what you're talking about, because that's with anything though on the internet nowadays. I mean, there's a trail to whatever you do, but I think that LinkedIn especially.
Right. But the good thing about LinkedIn though is it's much more relaxed than it used to be. You do post personal stuff on there now, but it has to be in a certain dosage and a certain way. And not all personal stuff, because then people don't take you seriously, but it's good to post a little bit of personal for sure. But it's not like Facebook, like, you know, the old joke of, you know, what sandwich should I eat today? Like, as if anybody cares what you had for lunch, right? That's the joke.
Yes, that is how I make my coffee every morning, just so everyone knows.
I feel though that there will be a sort of tiredness after a while of people getting tired of sharing their whole personal life on social media. I feel like there's already a trend starting with, not with the younger people, but the people that have been on it a while.
Yeah.
I feel like there is a trend of like, who cares if people know what I'm doing or not? I mean, you know what I mean?
I have contact creator friends and I don't know how they do it. I'm like, I try to do a day in my life, but then I'm actually doing my day I'm doing the day and I forget like to film. I'm like, it's so hard. I'm like, I don't know how you guys like just all what you're always filming.
They will get burnt out, because you do get burnt out doing that after a while. Yeah.
I'm like, you're not, I'm like, are you, we're in the moment. We're doing things. I'm like, I'm working. I forgot to video myself typing on a keyboard. I'm at work.
Also, I don't have a need to share my whole private life minute to minute. Never have. I don't have a need and I don't want to. Every now and then I'll share something, but it's very curated with me. It's not, I'm very private. So
yeah,
people probably at one point thought that that they were getting my whole life story, but you're not, because you have to keep your life back. You know, you can't.
It's so filtered
out there.
The same way what your content is posting. Like, I'm like, this is not real life. Like, everybody's day to day does not look like this. I'm like, their days aren't perfect like this all the time. It's not how life works. It's so filtered.
Right. But then there were people that are like basically posting all their problems all the time. You also don't want to see all their problems because they're treating us all. It's good if they're having a major problem to say, you know, I need some support with this.
Yeah.
Sure. But there's the other way. I do feel, I was thinking the other day, I do feel there will be another, there'll just be an idea where people are sick of sharing their personal lives. You know, I think it's got to get old at some point.
Oh, no, 1,000%. And I mean, we talked a little bit about ethical sales and, you know, how important that is to you within organic marketing and things like that. So what does ethical selling actually look like?
Well, okay, this is going to be shocking, but I'll say it. If we understand that we have been sold to, and if we're sellers, sales, and we sold to other people for hundreds of years in a way which is not ethical, that's a good starting point right there. Because people are not aware of that. And it's shocking on purpose. When you look at how we have been sold to and how we sell, that it's not ethical, and in some cases, probably downright immoral, that's a good place to start, because then we can make a change. Does that make sense? Then it's not a tweak. So what do I mean by this? If you're looking to sell stuff to people because they're in a weak situation psychologically or mentally, that's just wrong. And, you know, we're doing that, you know, selling to old people, that's very wrong. Like, old people who are not of their right mind. I'm not saying selling anything to old people is wrong, because they need stuff. Old
people absolutely. Need stuff.
And I don't mean, I shouldn't say old, senior, more senior people. That's not even PC. Sorry about that. But
you're good.
Elderly people. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. That's the first thing. The second thing is, if you have all these sales systems that they're teaching people and making a lot of money selling selling systems that are teaching people how to get people into a manipulative state. Is that ethical? I don't think so, really, when you think about it. Let's just learn how to manipulate people. That's not ethical. And the more I thought about it, I thought, that's just wrong. Why can't we just highlight the value of what we're doing for the individual that might need it? And they're like, dang, I'm a sovereign human being, and I can see this is good, okay? And do I need it or not? Yeah, I probably do. Now, there are objections that you don't handle. Handling objections is like, how are we going to manhandle this person or, you know, deal with them? I feel it is about figuring out where people have so much fear, where they won't do it, because they're so afraid, but being in that fear is not serving them. Now, if it's not serving them, then it is our duty to help them to get out of the fear so they can actually see things clearly. Because then we are helping people to embrace reality, to be aware, awareness and reality. There's a great book, by the way, called Awareness, The Perils and Opportunities of Reality by Anthony DeMello. Is one of my favorite books, because we must embrace reality, and awareness helps us to do that. So I'm not saying you're on a call and you've understood this person really needs you, because I am on calls where most of the people really need us. Why? Their business is failing. Their business is failing. So if we help them, what are we doing? We're actually helping them save their business. We're helping them get clients that they do need, because they need to put food on the table. They need to make it work. Now, if they go back into the fear and they do not hire in with us when I know we can help because we have so much experience, am I doing them a favor by saying, oh, okay, that's fine? No, at that point, I got to fight for them. It's not manipulation. It's championing them. So the difference between championing somebody and helping, you know, fighting for them and manipulating, it's having a discussion of what is going to happen if this reality. What will happen if your business doesn't start doing better? Well, you know, I'll probably need to close it. Do you want to close it? No, I don't. Therefore, a solution needs to be found. Does that make sense?
It does. And I think it's like, it's not just affecting them and their business, but I'm sure other employees, like people that they're selling
family.
To that depend on this, like all of those kind of things.
Mm-hmm. But it's also getting clear on what do they want. Now, if they don't want to close the business and they don't want it to do badly for another 5 years, because usually they tell me, then there's a choice. So you don't want to continue as you are. No, I don't. Are you sure? Yes, I am. We have a solution. Do you want it? Oh, but it costs so much money. You just said you needed a solution. Do you think the solution, I don't talk to them like that. I'm just telling you like the points of what I'm ascertaining. So they're like, yep, it will work. I believe it'll work. Great. Then you're in your fear. It serves them for me to say, look, you are not going to change a situation without any new information coming in and new help and insight. Can we agree on that?
Yeah.
Somebody's been going around and around. Magically, they're not going to find an answer if they haven't found it in 2 years or 3 years or 5 years or whenever.
You need that outside input, a different viewpoint.
Right. But it's not just an output, an input. It is experience doing something. It's an experience of turning businesses around. In that case, I'm going to fight for them, for them. I'm not going to say, okay, see ya. I'll say, well, what is that? What's going to happen, reality, if you don't get help from me or somebody else? Yeah, I'll probably have to close my business. It's not. Do you believe that you will be able to? No, I don't. Why? Then I'm going to fight for them. Okay, so what's the reason? Well, usually it's I'm afraid of spending money. Or sometimes it's I'm afraid I will succeed. Or I'm afraid, they're not afraid we aren't going to do their job ever. They always say, we're not afraid you're not. They're afraid that they won't do their job. And I say, what if we will help you do your job? We will make sure, because we have a team. So that's where it's ethical, where you are fighting like mad to help them. Because a person should be serving, not selling. That's the difference. Are you serving or selling? If you're selling, don't do it. Serve. You're serving them.
Well, that's more authentic too.
Yes.
It's more authentic to you when you're doing it that way. It's more authentic to the business, I would assume.
Well, you can't feel good about yourself and your business if you feel like you just cajoled or persuaded somebody. It's not a good feeling. I wouldn't want that feeling. I want to feel they decided because they see it so great. And they decided because they do need help. And they're happy. They come in happy. They're great clients. You don't want to feel like you convinced somebody and hard sold them. Now, some people love hard selling and they couldn't care less. Okay, personally, it's not a good feeling really. And they're suppressing that icky feeling because it pretty much does feel icky.
Yeah.
And then everybody feels great about what they're doing. And then it's like, hey, we got these people into our program or our service or whatever people are selling. We feel great about how we did it. They feel great because they made the decision themselves with some help, because we had to explain it, and it works. So everybody wins and is a good feeling. But imagine if you hard sold somebody, they came in and then they regretted it, then they would just hate you.
Where's the integrity in it all?
Right.
And like,
right.
What's the return and reward for having integrity when you're doing these kind of things?
Yeah. And the other thing is not to sell on emotion. They always say you have to sell on emotion. You have to sell on emotion. I question that. I don't sell on emotion at all. I say, you know, do you want to see how this works exactly? It's logic. And therefore, you know, the people that don't need to be sold on emotion, the people that are logical and in reality are the ones that are attracted to us.
Which are those high network, high performing individuals.
People.
Yeah. Because they have to take the emotion out of it.
They don't want to be sold on emotion. They know it. Why are you selling? They know that you're even trying to sell them on emotion if you're doing that. They get it. People are smart now. I say smart now because I think we're smarter now because we have so much exposure from the internet, from COVID.
Yeah.
And also people are far more skeptical now because we don't just believe everything we hear now like the old days.
Well, no, you're fact checking or, you know, there's, like you said, it's just the amount of information that we're exposed to and it's such a high pace of it.
Mm-hmm. But also, you know, we're seeing that there are a lot of situations in history where we were, you know, scammed as far as being lied to. Now we know that many people in the past would believe everything they read on the news in the past. And there was only one news story. It was one line of reasoning. Now there's all these different points of view. And we're seeing like bit by bit how many hoaxes there were with just the news, with the government. We are now becoming aware and people are more aware. And we have to understand you can't be treating people like they're idiots anymore.
No, and I think we've got, I mean, there's cameras everywhere. Everyone has a camera phone. Everyone's doing everything. And I think, especially because like these people who are trying to hoax people have such online presence. But like once your personal brand's burned, like there's no coming back. Like I find it hilarious that like there's Anna Delvey's out there that are trying to do this and like Dancing with the Stars or what. I'm like, you're a criminal. You shouldn't be like the logical part of society, which is not everybody, but the logical portion, which is pretty large, is like, you're a criminal. Like you don't know. Or the guy that did the Fyre Festival. I'm like, you're going to try to, no one's going to go to your new festival. You stranded people in the Bahamas.
Actually, it's kind of shocking to me, and I won't mention names, but there was a person that was involved in the whole, what was that? The scandalous guy that was the Combs, Puffy Combs, is that his name?
Yeah, P. Diddy.
P. Diddy.
Paul Sean Combs, whatever his name is.
Doesn't he have like four different names?
Four different names, yeah. I'm like Sean Paul Combs, Sean Pizza, yeah.
Well, you know, someone, again, I'm not going to mention names, someone who was involved, that was, you know, involved. And I said to myself, I'm never going to watch another piece of media with that person in it, ever. Mm-hmm. A film comes out, I avoid it. That's how I use my principles. When somebody's, I just boycott. I've boycotted quite a few people out of principle because I'm not going to give them a dime. Several people, obviously. There was a famous health advocate, I won't mention the name again, wrote books, podcast. I've boycotted the podcast. And I'm actually going to delete his book from my Audible because he was involved with the Epstein thing. Okay?
Yeah.
That's where I stand. I think we all need to have that level of principles or we're done as a society if we don't have personal principles like that. And you might say, Sean, you know, it doesn't matter. It does matter. There's thousands of people that think like me. Then those people are actually going to lose money. And they're going to understand that. Well, anyway, the person that was involved in the Combs, you know, P. Diddy.
Yeah.
Caught red-handed, like, in a video, went viral, okay, in the video. I saw him in a commercial yesterday. And I said to my daughter, wow, people have short memories. Or the people that are putting in that commercial are very dumb. Because there's no way I would buy that product, even though it seemed like a good one. There's no way I'd buy the product.
I think it's short memory because so much is happening and we're overloaded with so many different things, so many different scandals.
I remember. And I'm not like a genius. If I remember, don't other people remember? Right? So maybe it's just me. I don't think I'm that extraordinary, to be honest. But if everybody did this, then we are voting with our, we're voting in our person. We're voting. I told my daughter, I said, that guy, I'm shocked he's in a commercial a few months after. Maybe it was a year. I don't know. I said, they have that short memories because I already know I'm never watching another piece of content that he's in. And I'm certainly not buying any product that he endorses because they're so dumb that they put him in a commercial. They just don't care. Why would they do that? So I feel we need to develop more principles in this system. We all need, it's our responsibility to develop more principles and to be, you know, the whole canceling thing. Yes, I am canceling them in my own mind, but there's a reason for that. I don't believe in this canceling everybody because they said something you don't like. That's different. This is like bona fide bad behavior. Would you agree?
Yes.
Bona fide bad behavior. Don't agree. I'm boycotting. I'm doing this for years. As soon as somebody does something unconscionable, I'm done. Okay? It's over. I mean, Roman Polanski was boycotted a long time ago by me. I will not watch any film because of the whole scam. Everybody's forgotten that now. I haven't. That was terrible. So I did mention one name. I wasn't going to do that. But the others. We won't tag them. Yeah. I'm sure he's not even on social media. But the point is, I feel that if we take it upon ourselves to be really strict about the, I think people are just not serious anymore. I think if we just say, you know, I'm going to take a stand. I'm going to stick by that stand. I'm not going to be wishy-washy. I think if everybody did this, if everybody was like me, I mean, everybody did this, that would create a movement of we aren't putting up with this. We just aren't.
Yeah.
And, but I think people are just like, oh, well, you know, it was a while ago. So what? It was still bad.
No, I agree.
Yeah.
Like you should, why are we even discussing it in the first place? Like it shouldn't even have been a thing.
Right. But it is. Mm-hmm. And people are forgetting stuff really quickly. You're right. But I don't know if people forget that quickly. I think most people are like, if they're horrified by something, they'll boycott, but we should boycott, I think.
No, 1,000%. I mean, when we were talking a little bit about like society in general, we were discussing resilience versus like the coddling society and how discomfort builds that kind of strength in society. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like that has a lot to do with it? We're just coddling a little too much and we need to be more stringent and a little more strict?
I don't want you to think like, you know, we got to be strict and, you know, the whole 75 hard thing. I think that there's like these extremes going on. I feel that if we are gently principled, let's put it that way, you don't have to be aggressive. I think if we just calmly decide where we stand on things, but then the whole, you know, coddling of the American mind, there's a book about that. I do feel that we complain too much in America. I do feel that I'm so grateful that I was not born in Africa. And I'm so grateful that I was not even born in India, because you could have been born into a low caste, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we, as Americans, need to just look at reality, that even though things are not great all the time, the level of not greatness is so watered down from the level of not greatness in other countries, because it's really terrible in other countries, certain countries. So, you know, the fact that we were just lucky that we were born on this plot of earth and not on another one in Africa or some other place where women are treated really poorly and terribly and killed. I think that that's a good place to start as well. It's like, well, you know what? Good thing we live here, because it's not that bad here. We can still do what we want. Sure, there's ups and downs, but really, for the average American that's middle class, we really don't have that much to complain about. We have clean water. No. We have food. We have an abundance here. Too much food. So really, I feel that if people stopped complaining altogether, that'd be a good start.
Oh, I agree. I just literally just got back from India, and everyone is like, oh, are you happy you're back? Because I got sick. And I'm like, I love America so much. I'm like, I can just breathe the air. I can drink water out of the tap. I'm like, you have no idea how great this country is until you have to go somewhere else where like you can't have ice and you have to be so careful about what you eat. And like the air quality is horrible. And I'm like, nope, I came here, opened all my windows, like sat outside, just breathed.
Yeah.
Freely. People, and it was phenomenal.
They have no idea that, you know, a lot of the world does not have proper drinking water. Can you imagine getting up and air quality? Imagine waking up every day with that situation and not being able to breathe and not being able to drink, like, and have to limit. Like, this is like something that you would have to spend your whole day thinking, how do I drink today? How do my kids drink today? How do we get enough water that they have at least one cup of water that's pure today? Or get gas masks. I mean, that would just basically take your whole life just figuring out how to eat, drink. And that's why a lot of those third world countries, those people can't progress, because you can't move forward in your life. It's just basics, survival. So no. I do know lot of, you know, we all know a lot of Americans aren't doing well, for sure. But that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about
this is so different.
Middle class people that we have to stop. We need to deal with what's politically you might not agree, blah, blah, blah. I get it. But we have so many basic things in place and not basic things that no matter what's going on with the government, there's not much to complain about, really, apart from that, right?
I mean, and you started off, like, you were in debt, and you reached 7 figures in, 17 months, I believe you said? So,
yes.
I mean, for you, you've gone through that kind of experience. What shifted in you when you were like, before you really reached success? Like, what happened where you're like, I'm going to make this, I'm going to switch this on, and I'm going to succeed?
Okay. We need to take radical responsibility for our lives and what we're doing. We need to just, no matter how much, no matter how I was depressed. I had dysthymia. It was hard to function. I had the two kids. It wasn't like I was like, yay. I was dealing with feeling a lot of different ways. And I thought, okay, no matter how I feel, I have to do this. And I think that's the key. No matter how I feel, I need to do this. Because what's standing between success and people is emotions. That's it. It's just emotions. I don't feel well. I'm depressed. Okay, I'm not going to do anything. I did things anyway. That's the mollycoddling part, right? That we're, I don't feel. We need to do stuff even when we don't feel like it. Artists paint even when they don't feel like it. Writers write even when they don't feel like it, because, you know, they've interviewed many, many writers and artists over the years. And not one has said, oh, gosh, I get up every morning and I just feel like painting or writing. No, they just make a beeline. They don't think about it. They're not thinking about how they feel. They sit down and they start doing the work.
Yeah,
that's a fact. So what I thought was, wow, okay, I'm it. I'm tagged here. Nobody's going to save me. I didn't want to be a person that's on Social Security. Oh, goodness, God forbid, because that's not my mentality. I thought, this is, do I give up and just be on social welfare? That's not my thing. And I'm able-bodied and I'm smart. Why would I do that? That's for people that cannot work, that cannot. Yeah. I get it. And again, not knocking that, but that's not me. Why would I do that? So I just said to myself, if not now, when? I woke up and I said, if not now, when? I need to do this now. I need to start doing this now. And that is so painful when you are nowhere in a process. Do you know what I'm saying? When you're nowhere in the process and you know there's this huge mountain that you have to climb and you are just taking one step. There's so much emotional pain involved with that. I get that. I totally understand people and that, because I've been through that. And I think that you really need to have been through that to understand that, that it's, wow, this is just, oh my gosh, I've got to bite one thing at a time. A lot of pain while I'm taking care of the kids. And literally, I remember just feeling anxious all the time. And also,
I can only imagine, yeah.
Yeah. And also, anxiety has been a thing in my life. So I've done this with probably, you know, I wouldn't say I have an anxiety disorder, but maybe I did. Okay. I just know I was anxious all my life.
Yeah.
So regardless of what it was, I was anxious. Okay. And then you're in debt, the two kids, also running around, taking care of your kids and cleaning and all of that and being emotionally there at least a little bit, you know? So I just said, I have to do this and it's all on me. Radical responsibility. And I just started working at it and started working out. Oh my gosh, it was a miracle. And I was just so thrilled when I saw it unfolding in front of my eyes. I had to pinch myself every day when I woke up. I thought, wow, I did it. So that was a miracle and it was amazing. And I'm just grateful. So,
yeah,
of course, I am thrilled when we help people to maybe not as drastic a situation, but of course, I want to help people do what I did. Why wouldn't I?
No, because I mean, how do you also, you had two little kids in New York City. How do you parent through that kind of financial burden? Because like they're depending on you, they're looking at you, they take it all in, like the kids.
Also, I was homeschooling at first. So, you know, I don't know. I do know I had friends saying to me, like, I was just on auto drive and I worked from seven till, when I started my business, I worked from seven till seven taking care of my kids. Okay. So, because I was going to bring my own kids up and also I couldn't afford a nanny and I wouldn't have had one anyway. So I realized, okay, from seven till seven, I'm not going to be able to work on my business. Maybe a tiny bit fit in. And I realized I needed to work from seven till midnight every day to get 5 hours at least in. So I worked from seven till midnight and then I got to bed and I was. And of course, my daughter was still waking up a few times a night. So I was in a state of dire sleep deprivation for a while. But I did that for 2 years solid. I didn't watch any media at all. Finally, I decided I'd let myself watch one 45-minute episode of a show once a week, because I realized I didn't have time to sit around. I was a beast, because I realized if you work out the hours, there was no way I could build a business if I relaxed and watched TV. I didn't do that. So reality, again, an awareness of the situation is needed. So I just started doing that. And I was just running my kids around in the subways and taking them to, you know, play dates and lessons and teaching them. And then after a while, I would get a babysitter to take them for like 3 hours a day. So I'd get 3 hours plus five. Then I was working 8 hours on my business. But it was a while before I could do that. So I just made it work. But, you know, I got to say, when I look back, I don't know how I did it. I don't know how I did that and got the energy every day to do that with very little sleep and just kept going. I just think you just do what you need to do.
No, 1,000%. Yeah. No.
It's not fun.
It can't. It couldn't be. It's exhausting. I can only imagine.
Yeah. So that was it. And now I'm older. I mean, I don't know if I could do that now. I you know, you get older and you're like, well, I already went through that. Yes. I work, but I do not work like that anymore. I have a really manageable, I do what I want now.
No, but that's so nice. And I mean, now that you're older, what does success look like for you now?
You know, success is really about several things. There is financial success, for sure. And that's important because you really want to not go into your, if I do retire ever, but you don't want to go into your more older years worried about money, because I was worried about money my whole life. So heck yeah, I don't want to worry about that. So I want to get to a position where zero worry, I'm good, I have some good investments, and I could quit working now and my investments would probably carry me through, even if I lived to 100, because you have to think about that now. Yeah. You're going to live longer. So there's the financial success, but that's only successful if you did it in the right way. There's doing business in the wrong way, and there's doing business in the right way. And I just kind of enlightened people a little bit on the right way. And if you create money and wealth the right way, then it's a success. If you create wealth in the wrong way, that is not a success. If you're ripping people off and you're in the mafia, or that's not success.
No, but yes. Yeah.
You get it? So
yeah,
not success. That's, you might have money, but it's actually not successful money. And people don't quite understand that sometimes. So it has to be in a certain way. That's certainly important. Beyond that, once you get to a certain point, you want to create more impact and legacy and help more people. So I feel a human being is a success as a human being when you truly want to help other people.
Yeah.
Now, I also have a faith that I practice. So for me, that's important too. Okay. And also setting a good example to people and not scandalizing them, I think is really important. Like we were talking about, that people should look to you and say, well, how are you behaving? And are you scandalizing them or showing them bad behavior? Because if you are having bad behavior, you are actually influencing other people also to have bad behavior just by your actions, right? So I think it's just being a good person, you know, also the financial and being able to do what you want, that's success, surely. I can travel whenever I want. That's success, right? That's great. I'm free.
Yeah.
So it's financial freedom, life freedom. And then it's, how do you turn up every day? Do you help people? Do you truly want to help as many people that come across your path? I think that's really important.
No, 1,000%. I mean, that's just something that you're doing well now that you're older and your new viewpoint and everything like that. But I like to wrap up every episode by asking one final question. It's kind of going to bring you back to a younger stage. But if you could give one piece of advice to your 16-year-old self, what would that be?
That's a really hard one. People have asked me this before. And it's
different
hard.
Person.
It's hard because I don't regret. It's hard. I just got goosebumps. I'm choking up a bit here. I believe that even though my life was pretty unorthodox in some ways, like I decided after college, I worked a bit, I decided to be free then.
Yeah.
And I don't regret that, because I meet a lot of people that say, oh my gosh, I never traveled. And was it hard? It was, but I didn't have that regret of, oh, I never traveled. I've traveled. If I travel, it's fun, but I don't have that. I never did this when I was young.
Yeah.
Was I flat broke? Sure. I survived. And it was an experience. Did some bad things happen? Sure. But no matter what I'd done in my life, bad stuff happens to everybody. So that wasn't, you know, anything. I don't know. Maybe it was just, you know, do exactly what you did do. You know, it could just be that. Because I did all that. I was free. I traveled, broke, starving artist type, had that experience. And I managed to turn it around at a very late age. So I have no regrets. If I didn't turn it around, then I'd be thinking, gee, maybe I should have applied myself earlier. I don't know. All I know is it really worked out well for me.
Yeah.
And I'm super grateful. And I had a very varied, interesting life. So maybe the 16-year-old is, you know, maybe have a backup, but don't completely be all about money and what people think is success, because you want to also explore those other sides of yourself. So maybe it's, well, now you can have a balance. We couldn't then. There was no internet. Maybe it's like, hey, do something you really love and then do something because you really just need to make money. That might be the advice now.
I love that, but that's such good advice. I mean, and people need to hear that. Like, you have to, you know, when people are like, first marry for love and then marry for money, then marry for love. Mm. Very similar. You're like, money can help you get by. Yeah, do both.
Or no, make money
goals.
Yourself.
Yeah, make money yourself.
Marry for love. I think also people should marry for love and similar wanting similar things in their lives. I think that people don't place enough importance on the question, do we want the same things? And I believe that is the number one most important question when people are going to get married, to explore, do we both want the same things? Because if you do, you're both going down the same pathway together.
Yeah, 1,000%. And hopefully your goals, I mean, goals change, things shift, yeah. But if you start out the conversation like that, 1,000%, you're going in the right direction.
Right.
Exactly. Thank you so much for coming on. This was so enlightening in so many different ways, from the sales points to coaching to motherhood and, you know, how to believe in yourself and society and where we're heading. And I just really appreciate it. I thought it was really, really an amazing conversation.
Yeah, it went in different directions, but thank you for having me. It was interesting.
Yeah, 1,000%. Everyone, I'm going to put where you can find her in the show notes. So make sure you can find her on LinkedIn and Instagram and her website. Check it out. If you're looking for coaching, she has all the services. So those will also be listed in the show notes. And thank you, everyone. We'll see you next week.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events, major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories, the unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.